Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5, 51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd, 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome, everybody, inside Patriots Playbook for Wednesday on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. It is the Patriots and San Diego Chargers, of course, coming up on Sunday night in San Diego, California. We'll spend some time certainly looking at the game today and what else is going on around the National Football League news-wise as well. Some interesting media coming out of San Diego, which we'll get to shortly. But in the meantime, Michael Parenti, who normally joins us on Wednesdays from Patriots Football Weekly, is with us today for a short while before Coach Belichick gets underway with his media proceedings out in Santa Clara. Mike, what's it going on? What's going on out there? Fill us in on some details.
Well, it's very hot, I can tell you that. It feels like it's like 90 degrees out here today. The sun is beating down. We're standing behind the stadium at San Jose State, and it's called Spartan Stadium, so it's a very nice little old-school college football stadium. If you like that old-school college vibe, I think you'd like this place, John, because that's kind of your thing, right?
You yeah,
like those
absolutely.
Old college stadiums.
Yep.
But we're behind the stadium right now. There's a little bit of a backdrop set up, and Coach Belichick's going to come out momentarily in about 20 minutes, and we're all just kind of milling around waiting. We're going to have some player availability afterward, and then there's going to be practice at 12:40 Pacific time, so that's going to be well after you're off the air. So there's going to be a lot going on today and for the next 2 days as well as the players start to acclimate themselves to these new conditions. It'll be interesting to see how they adjust to this. It's kind of a different scenario, a different setup for them. They're trying to treat it as much as a normal week as possible, but of course there are some differences. You're practicing on a different field, staying in different hotels, and not sleeping in your own bed at night, so there are some differences. But I think overall, I think we'll find at the end of the week that they'll have adjusted fine. It seems like it's a pretty professional setup, and they have everything they need out here, John, too, if in terms of equipment and all the technology, the video technology. Everything they need is here, and so it seems like it's a pretty good setup so far.
Well, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday, Mike, about how they were trying to keep this as close to home as possible and make the guys feel like they were East Coast. And I know that the coaches have said several times, in fact, since the end of Sunday's game in San Francisco, that this game and this week almost had a divisional opponent feel to it, simply because they played San Diego a lot over the last 2 or 3 years. And so combined with that, and the fact that they are staying out there so they wouldn't have to go by coastal over this week, I was kind of curious as to what your impressions were, number one. And number two, what have the players and the coaches said in terms of feedback about this relocation for a week?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the divisional game aspect, because it is true. They play the Chargers so much now, and it seems like every year, at least once in the regular season, or then again in the playoffs. And they played them twice last year, which is like having them in the AFC East. So they are familiar with a lot of the personnel, and there are a lot of the same players that have carried it over from last year, too. You know, as far as feedback from players, you know, so far so good. We had a few conference calls on Monday, not much player access yet. This will be our first live access since Sunday's game, so we really don't know how they're feeling yet. They've had 2 days to kind of get adjusted. This is the 3rd day, so we're going to find out a little bit more today about how they're feeling, but everybody seems to really like the trip and doesn't have any problems with it. I mean, they, you know, if you go to the Super Bowl like they did last year, you're kind of used to this sort of thing, because you do spend a week out in Tempe last year that they did. They were in Arizona. And so they got a chance to sort of get a feel for what it's like to practice away from home for a week. And when you do that in a Super Bowl setting, I think you can probably handle it here. It's kind of the same scenario. You're practicing at a college stadium. You're using different weight facilities and a weight room. So, I mean, a lot of things do carry over. We'll see more from today what they think about it. But I think so far so good. I don't think anybody's had any complaints.
Okay, let's step into a little bit of the news anyway, because not too far down the coast where you guys are located, Mike Reese reported in the Boston Globe that Tom Brady did indeed have his knee surgery. Do you guys know anything further beyond the fact that Tom did undergo the knife?
No, the first that I had heard was reading it this morning. So, I mean, I knew that he hadn't had it yet, and we had heard the news that he was going to come out here to have it done. So that was something we were all familiar with, and we knew he had chosen the doctor. You know, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, obviously, he had to wait for some of the swelling to go down and sort of take care of that issue. And because it's happened so early in the season, he does have some time to wait, where he can he can take a little time to just kind of recover and recuperate first, then have the surgery and still be back on the field, or at least be ready to go by the time camps start up next year. So that's sort of the benefit of a player getting hurt early. I mean, obviously you never want to lose a player like Tom Brady, but it'd be more devastating if you lost him in week 16, where now his recovery time is a lot shorter, and he sort of has to make quick adjustments and probably wouldn't be ready for the next camp the following year. At least now, having it happen in September, he should be okay by the time April, May, June rolls around, and you figure by July in training camp, he's going to be back out there.
Absolutely. In fact, they were talking about on PFW in Progress just a short while ago, Andy had brought up the point that, last year, everybody recalls, Philip Rivers underwent ACL, repair surgery, and didn't take him quite as long to come back. And Brady has a longer time to recoup and recover before next year's camp starts. So there shouldn't be, as long as everything goes okay with the surgery, which apparently it did, and everything goes okay with the recovery, there shouldn't be any problem with him bouncing back.
Well, you assume the surgery will go fine, and then from there, everybody's recovery time is a little bit different. So it's always hard to gauge. A guy like Philip Rivers, I don't think the procedure he had was as serious. I think he had a scope a week before that playoff game as well, so he had had some sort of procedure done, went out there and played in the AFC Championship, and then when they lost, he was clear to pretty much have the surgery and get it out of the way. So, his recovery time being quicker, I don't know if that relates to Brady as much. We'll see how he reacts to it, but, as a lot of people have said, this is apparently a pretty mild, and I guess to use the term mild loosely, but a mild injury in the fact that it's routine, it's common, and it's happened so many times before, and there have been so many procedures done to repair these sort of injuries that it becomes commonplace after a while. It's not something that is like a groundbreaking surgery and they're trying to, put a cadaver bone in somebody's foot or something crazy like that. This is a routine that players tear ACLs all the time and suffer ligament damage in the knee, so this is something they feel fairly confident he'll be able to bounce back from.
Mike, a couple of things on the Chargers here. Number one, I already kind of mentioned that the Patriots coaches kind of feel like this is a divisional game almost because they've played them so many times over the last few years. But noticed as well where they've said that they've really only pulled out their own videotape and films in looking at the Chargers as opposed to maybe taking a look at the Chargers, like last week against Miami. Is that strange to you?
Well, why not? They seem to beat them all the time, so I'd probably look at the way I played them too, and as opposed to how somebody else has. And in terms of Miami, they're doing so many different things offensively with that wildcat formation that I don't know if anything really is applicable to this week's game. So in other words, I would take what I did last year in the AFC title game, given the fact that San Diego has mostly the same personnel. I mean, they don't have Sean Merriman. We know there are some absences there in the defensive side of the ball. But for the most part, they've had success against this team. They blew them out in week two last year after the whole Spygate controversy. They beat them in the playoffs several years ago at Qualcomm Stadium. And now here they are, removed maybe a few months from a playoff victory at Gillette Stadium in the AFC title game. So they've had some pretty good success against San Diego. I would stick with what works. Obviously, I got to tinker a few things upon the Patriots because there are some new players. And you kind of want to make adjustments based on how they're playing right now. And San Diego is still averaging a pretty good amount of points per game, roughly about 30, a little bit less than that. But, again, LaDainian Tomlinson hasn't been the same running back this year. I thought he was starting to turn the corner last couple of weeks, but then he had a really, I would say, substandard effort against the Dolphins last Sunday. They didn't run the ball particularly well. They didn't run it all that much either. So you kind of wonder if the toe injury is still sort of bothering him, the one that kept him out of camps, or if he's just starting to get up there in age. He is 29 years old now, and you wonder if he's starting to reach that wall a bit, and is he starting to slow down and decline. So there are a lot of things to look at going into this game.
Yeah, I just kind of thought that, the thing that worried me the most about the Chargers coming in is that last week notwithstanding, here's a team that was doing pretty well on offense, and yet LaDainian Tomlinson admittedly has not performed up to par. They really haven't had a healthy Antonio Gates yet. They certainly may not have Chris Chambers for this week as well, and yet these guys still seem to be plenty potent. And so I wonder they seem like there could be an opportunity here for something different to throw at the Patriots.
Oh, yeah, I think they may make some adjustments of their own, too. And maybe even the Chargers take a little bit of what Miami did and try to use that to their advantage, Maybe they run up a few plays where Tomlinson lines up behind center and they put Rivers out wide. I don't really know. They may try to do anything just to get an edge here. But the bottom line is, without Chambers, that's going to be difficult to do because Chambers was their only legitimate deep threat. And not having him now, as it seems it may be, is going to be tough for them to air it out deep against the secondary. It's really going to rest heavily on Tomlinson's shoulders, and I'm not sure what he's going to do against this team. He's had some pretty big games against the Patriots in the past, and then there have been some moments where he hasn't been so effective. So it's really been a balance here. But I think the thing with San Diego, when you look at their schedule this season, you look at how they've done to the first five games, when Tomlinson scores, they seem to win. When he doesn't score, they don't win. I think that's been the bottom line. He didn't score in each of the first two games, and they started 0-2. He scored two touchdowns in the next two. They even their record. And then he was kept out of the end zone against Miami, and not surprisingly, they lost that game as well. So they dropped to 2-3. So really, it's all about getting him going. If they get Tomlinson in the act, he can get in the end zone a couple of times, and there's a good chance they're going to win the ballgame.
Do you get the sense, then, that after what we saw Matt Cassel do this last week for the Patriots and finally hook up long distance with Randy Moss, that he's getting more and more comfortable being thrust into the spotlight role that he's in at quarterback, and maybe, just maybe, the other guys are getting more comfortable with him?
I think so. I think that happens over time. That's something that you expect. It's hard early on, and even though he took a lot of reps in training camp, it's different when you're in the real games, and I think that was definitely a big factor. Having that bye week when it happened, it really helped, I think, and you never really want to have that early bye because now you're playing 12, 13 consecutive weeks. But with the situation being what it was, coming off a bad loss and having all these chemistry issues on offense, that was a good time for the bye week. It gave him 2 weeks to get on the same page with everybody, and I think it showed Sunday in San Francisco. And that long touchdown pass was a great play. It was perfectly executed. And then you start to see some other areas where, you know, maybe it's not 100% yet, you know, because they tried it again later in the quarter, and it got picked off on the thrown ball. So, but I applaud Cassel for trying it the second time. I think that was a smart move. I think you got to keep trying it until somebody stops it, but don't lose your confidence and just keep trying to make that play. And I think you're going to start to see it even more as time goes on when they get comfortable with each other. And I think the more Cassel attempts those deep passes, the better his accuracy will be on those throws as well, because I think that's probably his biggest drawback. Not the fact that he can't get the ball there, because I think he can, but I think at times it's an accuracy issue. And when you get that settled and squared away, then you have something big going on.
Mike, before we let you go off and listen to Coach Belichick, I'd be curious to note if you have any questions for him today and what they might be.
Yeah, I'm actually looking to talk a little bit about Brandon Merriweather. I think he's an interesting subject. You know, here's a guy that struggled with his hands last year, sort of got ridiculed good-naturedly by his teammates for not being able to catch the ball, and now here he is with two picks through five games, and he's made a big impact. And both of his picks this year have actually turned games around. He's made some big plays, and we know he worked on the jug machine during the offseason, took some extra measures to work on his hands. So it'll be interesting to see what he did there, and hopefully I get a chance to talk to him today and find out what he's done during the offseason to really improve his hands, because it seems like so far the work has paid off.
All right, very good. All right, Mike, we'll let you get off to that, and then we'll look forward to seeing the responses.
All right, John, thanks.
Mike, thank you. That's Mike Parenti, of course. Hold on just a second, though, Mike. Hold on 2 seconds, because Gary wanted to talk to you. Mike Parenti from San Jose, or Santa Clara, California, anyway, where the team is located. They're actually working out at San Jose State University, and that's where they're located with the training camp, if you will, today. The practice is today, and then I guess the practice gets underway, Mike said, in about an hour or so after they've met some media obligations out on the West Coast, and then they will practice for the afternoon. Of course, by the time they get wrapped up, we'll be long since gone here today. It's a little different when you have to operate from different poles, as we almost are here. Those are the big things. But nevertheless, if there's an update, we'll bring it to you, and hopefully we'll get a chance to check in with Mike a little bit later on as well, see if anything did transpire out of today's media briefing, if you will, in California. To kind of get started today, actually, we did get started, didn't we, with Mike Parenti from the West Coast, which is always good. Check in where the Patriots are. Got to do that, right? Bring you up to date on everything that's going on, and things are just getting underway for the day out there. But here's the thing that I wanted to kind of jump on today, because I get the sense, and maybe this is just me, because we kind of went through this last year. You'll recall, of course, when the teams had the war of words going on. It seemed like it came certainly more from the San Diego side than it did from the Patriots side, and maybe a lot of that came from the whole Spygate issue and LaDainian Tomlinson basically calling us classless and all that kind of stuff that was going on. And of course, you know, the Patriots, after the Spygate issue, went out and just whacked San Diego in the regular season at home, and then, of course, they ended up beating them again last year 21-12 in the AFC Championship game last January. And there was, you know, war of words and battles of the trenches going on between several of the players, certainly from the featuring the offensive line of the Chargers and the defensive line of the Patriots. You know, the Nick Hardwick, Richard Seymour, brouhaha, war of words, what have you, that took place last year as well. And I find it curious, guys. I really do. I find it very curious that bad will lingers still. I don't know if it has anything to do with the fact that it was the Chargers that got beat or if they really still have ill will toward the Patriots over what transpired last year. I mean, most athletes are taught, I think, and of course if you played a game at any level, you know that, you know, you once a game is over, you try to put it behind you, otherwise for fear of letting it ruin your focus for the next game. And that's what these Patriots have always subscribed to. This team has always subscribed to that theory, that phenomenon, that practicality, if you will. I mean, we always try to put the bad things behind you, in no matter what walk of life you're in, and then you move on to the next issue and the next job and the next this and the next that, and you eventually forget all the bad stuff. But the Chargers really seem to be hanging on here, and I'm going to read something to you in case you didn't get a chance to see it today, but this comes from the San Diego Union Tribune again. And there's a story in the newspaper today from Chris Jenkins, who does some of their writing, along with Kevin Acey, who we spoke with yesterday here on the program. And, of course, if you haven't had a chance to hear that, you should download the podcast and listen in, because Kevin had some great things to say about this Chargers franchise. Very animated, very informational, and a good conversation with him yesterday. That'd be yesterday's podcast. Anyway, I'm looking at some of the comments that are still coming from these guys in regards to having to face the Patriots when this team is 2-3, the Chargers, that is, and they just got whacked by Miami, which shocked everybody, and they face a very difficult road ahead after the Patriots over. They get Buffalo, and then they got to go play that game in London against the New Orleans Saints. So it's not an easy time right now to be a Charger or a Charger fan either. And on top of that, they've got the injury problems that they've had, including, of course, Sean Merriman gone for the year. So, at any rate, I just wanted to give you a little sampling of what some of these guys are saying in regards to the Patriots right now. For instance, LaDainian Tomlinson, guy who really kind of started it all in light of Spygate a year ago by basically calling the Patriots a classless organization and what have you. He says, in terms of the Chargers trying to get their season restarted, I believe was the question posed to him. And what better team to do it against than the Patriots because of the emotional value of this quote-unquote rivalry between these two teams. And Tomlinson says, could be good and bad. We know it's going to be a heck of a competitive game. We know we've got to fight. All right, so a little tepid, a little lukewarm, right? A little like tapioca pudding from LaDainian Tomlinson, right? I would say so. And here's a guy that, in Tomlinson, who probably epitomizes the Chargers' troubles right now. I mean, here's a guy that is not performing up to the capabilities to which people are used to seeing him. And yes, he has been bothered by some injuries, and he's had a bad toe and some other things going on, so nobody really knows what quite to make out of LaDainian Tomlinson this year. All they know is that his production has not been up to his usual production. How about some other things? Remember what Nick Hardwick, their center, said last year about Richard Seymour? Let's see, here we go. This is a good one. Hardwick says he's respectful of the Patriots in general, and especially the New England defensive players he blocks. But, of course, Richard Seymour is the one that he's had the problem with. His quote was, "Richard Seymour is the biggest bleep I've ever come across in football." And this was after, you'll recall, the conference title game last January. He says, "They've got 10 good football players on that team. Richard Seymour is a dirty, cheap, little pompous bleep." All right. Now he elaborates. "When Jarvis Green is on the field in place of Seymour, they have 11 great players that compete how you're supposed to compete. But that Richard Seymour is the biggest bleep I've ever played. Head slapping, foot stomping in the pile, running by and throwing punches in your back late. He's a bleep." Now, of course, we know that Seymour has denied any dirty play. He just said that, as you'll recall, last January, that he thought Hardwick's comments were classless, and that he'd rather kind of handle the any differences on the field with them rather than talk about it in the media. Fact is that this kind of stuff is still going on. And Hardwick was asked again what he thought about facing the Patriots this week. And his quote is, "Yeah, that's always a good time." Eyes rolling in the back of the head and walking away from his questioner. So there's still some angst there on the part of the Chargers. And I wonder if you think, A, does that, do you think that could serve to help the Patriots? Is it much ado about nothing? Could it hurt the Chargers because they're becoming singularly focused in their, I don't know, hatred, for lack of a better phrase, of the Patriots? Do you look at this these games now because they've played often enough? By our coaches' standards here, it seems like a divisional game, they've already said, trying to prepare for this team this week. Does it help or hurt? Does it give you an edge? And again, you always look for an edge wherever you can get it. Could it give the Patriots an edge? I don't know. I found it curious that the media stories began this week about this quote-unquote rivalry of words between the two sides, and a lot of it is because they've played some meaningful football games over the last couple of years, and the Patriots have largely had the upper hand in the games that really counted. I mean, you know, let's face it. Two playoff games in the last 2 years have ended not well for the Chargers when it comes to playing the Pats. Curious. Here's another guy. LaDainian Tomlinson went on to say a little bit after he confronted the offending players at midfield after their playoff victory year before last. Chargers linebacker Sean Phillips also was one of the ones that used the word classless in reference to the Patriots. And Tomlinson even said again this week that he said Sean Phillips will have a grudge against that team the rest of his career. And I'm wondering if you kind of find this curious in light of the fact that the Chargers have so many other things going on with their football team, problems, injuries, what have you, that their focus is now kind of seems to be, you know, honing in on their disdain for the Patriots and or the Patriots players. Does this, I guess here's a question for you, does this then turn into the edge that maybe the Chargers need in an effort to, gain a bit of an advantage against New England for this Sunday? Could. We've seen the Patriots, you know, play the whole psychological thing to their advantage and then some against other teams. Might the Chargers be trying to do the same to New England in this particular instance? I kind of think so. Although, Mike Goff, who's one of their guards, did say the San Diego Chargers need to take care of the San Diego Chargers, which I also thought was an interesting way to end it, because most of the rest of the story, the article, and from what I could gather in the locker room, had to do with the focus on the rivalry with the Patriots and how it could be coming at a good time simply because the Chargers need an emotional kick in the pants. So that's how they're kind of looking at it from the San Diego point of view. And I'd kind of like to know how you look at it from your point of view going into this game. It's a big game. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. But I sense now that there's an opportunity now for the Patriots, even though the Chargers are a favorite going into the game, and they probably should be. It is their home game after all. I don't know if there'd be too many games that the Patriots, even in their current state, will be favored on the road this year. Don't know. At this stage of the game, just don't know. Unlike a year ago, where we did know. But because of this, I'm sensing an opportunity, I think, for the Patriots to win this game on Sunday. Certainly if things break out the way they do each and every week, you know, this team has an opportunity to win. But you kind of thought, you know, looking at this two-game road trip before they get a chance to come back home, it's like, all right, the San Francisco game is really important because there's a team that's probably a little lesser quality. Patriots need to take care of business and win that one, because you got to figure like the San Diego game is going to be imminently tough, very hard to win. And I think most of us thought San Diego would probably win that game at Miami last week. And what do? They go out and they blow it and they only score 10 points in losing it. So this puts a little bit different face on it. And now some might say, well, the Chargers could be maybe have their backs against the wall a little bit. And as I've just described, it seems to me that they're beginning to sort of try to create that psychological edge for themselves through the media or in the locker room or what have you, because they're trying to drum up some of this disdain, some of this hatred for the Patriots based on the previous performances. Well, I kind of look at that a little bit differently. I'm thinking that maybe if the Patriots stay focused on the task at hand, maybe if they can continue to take some chances and, you know, continue to bring along Matt Castle and continue to throw down the field a little bit like they did with Randy Moss last week and, you know, continue to find a way, even if it's running back by committee, to create some opportunities and keep it out of the hands of Phillip Rivers and company, that this Patriots team can do to San Diego this next week what they did to San Francisco last week. I did not think like this a week ago at this time, gang. I did not. I thought the Patriots would be fortunate to beat San Francisco and to get out relatively healthy with a loss at San Diego. That's what I thought this time a week ago. Now I'm feeling differently. See how things change in this business? They change from week to week, day to day, game to game. I have a little different outlook and a little different feel about this Patriots team. Not that I think they're getting anywhere close to where they were a year ago. Don't get me wrong. But I'm looking at this one game, one week at a time, like, you know, the guys in the locker room are supposed to, and at least they say they do. And if I look at it this way and compared from last week to now, I see a difference mentally, physically, preparedness. I also see a big difference in their opposition now as compared to a week ago, whereas last week they were 2-2 and somewhat confident and rolling up some points, and they lost a couple of last-minute games that they felt like they should win. Of course, they could have lost them too, a couple of games. But you know, here's a team that let's see, they lost to Carolina last second, they lost to San Diego or to Denver last second. Those certainly could have been two wins. You know, they beat the crud out of the Jets. They whacked Oakland at Oakland, and then of course they threw up the stinker at Miami. San Diego is not that far away from being 4-1. I don't know if 5-0 is a stretch, but they could be. I think fans, at least in San Diego, feel like this team would be 5-0 if they were healthy. But then again, I think the Patriots would also potentially be 4-0 if they were completely healthy. It's slipping just a little bit, and this is a pivotal game from San Diego's point of view. This could restamp them as a contender. They're two games now behind Denver. A Denver team that a lot of people feel like is not as good from top to bottom as San Diego may be in that West Division. And yet, they could slip even further behind the Broncos in the division if they lose this game to the Patriots. This is a big game for Week 5, or in this case, Week 6, for the San Diego Chargers. Big. It means more, I think, to San Diego, maybe, than it does to New England. Although you always like to beat contending teams. You always like to beat teams that you could be jockeying with for playoff positioning, which is, that's why this game is really, it's big for either one. But I get the sense that it could be bigger for San Diego than New England. And the Patriots are taking the right approach heading in. If they don't shoot themselves in the foot, this could be one of those types of games for the Patriots that could signature, put a stamp on your season. I feel it building just a little bit. Do you? Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number if you'd like to call in and discuss that. We can do that, and we'll talk about what you feel about how the Patriots and the Chargers rivalry continues to progress as we prepare for this game, as the team prepares for this game on Sunday night. Let's pause here for a timeout. Got some other news and notes to share with you and much more to come right inside the playbook.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-Pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst! Are you kidding me?
Revolution.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day.
Tony Bennett? I like
well,
it.
I was terribly alone.
A little bit of a different type of reintro to the program, but nevertheless, I could sit here and listen to this for a while. Wouldn't hurt me one bit.
City,
and yet, I guess there's still some football that we got to talk about. Welcome back inside the Patriots playbook for Wednesday.
I left my heart
in
San Francisco.
Yeah, there we go.
Unfortunately, they brought back Andy Hart.
High on a hill.
Yeah, that's pretty good, Gary. I like that. That's very good. Hopefully the Patriots didn't leave their game in San Francisco either as they get ready for the Chargers on Sunday night. Certainly something to consider. One of the other things that I wanted to kind of get at here today as far as email is concerned, so make sure you take note of the email address again, webradio@patriots.com, because I'm getting a sense now that through several different sources, media sources and websites and places that we like to visit and all, that more and more people feel like that the AFC race overall through 5 weeks is as wide open as it may have been in some time. Arguably since, 2000, 2001, prior to the Patriots' first Super Bowl win. Maybe the first time in a decade almost. Simply because of what has transpired with the Patriots and the injury to Tom Brady and all that kind of stuff. So if it is wide open, I want you to give me two teams. List two teams. Contender and pretender. Okay? Contender and pretender. Who amongst the teams, and if this is wide open, you could probably choose anywhere from 10 to 11, maybe even 12 different teams as a potential contender in the AFC as it now stands through 5 weeks. What have you seen? Have you seen enough of some of the other teams to think that, you know what, that team could be a contender in the AFC before everything is said and done? Flip side of that is pretender. Now, the teams that are winless, sorry, they're out of the derby. So if you're telling me that, you know, well, they're obviously pretender because they're 0-5, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense here. But of the teams, of those 10 or 11 that you would consider as a contender in the AFC now, which one is most likely to be a pretender, as I suggested? A joke. Not cut the mustard, that kind of thing. Not up to snuff. Not up to par with the rest of the teams. Somebody that's not as good or not in it for the long haul or maybe has a tougher schedule or injuries or what have you. I need a contender and a pretender from you from the AFC as it now stands. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number if you'd like to discuss it over the phone. We can certainly do that again. In addition to the other question talking about how San Diego seems to be finding themselves looking for that chip on the shoulder, gaining that psychological edge, and whether or not you think it could backfire on them or not. So there's a couple of things for you to chew on here this afternoon on a Wednesday, and hopefully we'll get some responses here, and we'll hear from you and get your thoughts on how you think about those items for the New England Patriots heading into this game on Sunday night against the Chargers. It is the NBC National Football Night in America broadcast, which is kind of cool. You certainly have the eyes of the nation on the team and on the game overall. I think most teams, and I don't even know if I'm going to go teams, I think most media, most national media, the guys that I speak with from time to time, they kind of look at this now as, well, the Patriots is sort of an afterthought. And I guess I can understand why that would be. A lot of teams do like to kind of sneak in from underneath and not necessarily make a big deal out of things, and they like to come in under the radar and like to be the surprise and, you know, don't like to have the target on their backs and all that kind of stuff, and maybe this is more to the Patriots' liking. I wonder if a lack of respect, which I don't see that the Patriots are getting, I see that, you know, I think they've certainly had their share of respect. I don't look at them being ignored, and I guess ignored probably is a little too strong a word. I don't look at, let's say, them being not front and center right now, which they're not terribly front and center. I mean, they have to put the Tennessee Titans up there because they're 5-0 right now. I don't look at this as being a sign of disrespect for the Patriots. What I look at as is that it's sort of a breath of fresh air for a lot of folks that cover, you know, pro football. And that this is a story that a lot of people before this season started didn't think they would ever get to. I mean, frankly, going into the season, I had a lot of ho-hum about this team. Oh, it's going to be the Patriots. They're going to be back in the AFC. Wouldn't be surprised to see the Pats and the Giants do it again, or the Pats and the Cowboys, or what have you. This is a story they have been dealt, the national media, that is. This is a story they've been dealt that they had no idea was coming. It floored them just like Tom Brady's injury floored you and floored me and floored everybody else. So in this regard, looking at their reaction to this story has actually been kind of curious. They haven't really jumped on anybody's bandwagon. I mean, you could make a case for Tennessee, but I don't think anybody looks at Tennessee as invincible. And that's not a play on words. Obviously, Vince Young is not the starting quarterback there at the present time. But, you know, they've managed to win the five games that they've played thus far. I don't think anybody looks at anybody in the AFC as being unbeatable or invincible or a potential champion. I mean, the Colts are having their struggles. We've already begun to document the struggles of the San Diego Chargers. Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, won a couple of games, and then they've, you know, come crashing back to earth a little bit. Cleveland has been a large bust, I think, for the most part. And although I'm not entirely certain that that team was, you know, even capable of living up to the praise that was heaped upon it in the offseason. A lot of that was because they won 10 games and didn't make the playoffs last year. But you'd have to say Cleveland is a disappointment based on where they finished a year ago, certainly. So there are some teams that were thought that, you know, were you know, chance to really excel that have fallen short. The Patriots just being one of several that you could categorize that way. And because of that, I think the national media has sort of taken a little different bit of an outlook over this race and kind of cast it up for grabs. And maybe they're just kind of picking and choosing their opportunities to cover teams, follow teams, what have you. I also get a sense that the NFC this year is stronger based on the head-to-head competition with the AFC this far. And I don't have the numbers right in front of me. Perhaps somebody else does and can share them. But, you know, they're much more competitive against the AFC this year. I would argue that they are an improved conference. They may even be better from top to bottom, although the worst team in the league last year was Miami, and look at Miami now, so who knows, right? I think all things are relative. I think it just kind of shows that all things are cyclical in life and in the National Football League. And the fact that if you can maintain some sense of not normalcy, some sense of continuity, when everybody is either rising or falling around you, then you're doing a remarkable job. I'd have to put the Patriots certainly in that category. They're doing a remarkable job trying to stay put. And, of course, I think everybody realizes, and this was documented a little bit last year, and it's been documented in previous years as well, and we've heard this from some of the Patriots players, and I'm sure many of you will recall this, that, you know, the Patriots themselves and a lot of the pros around the NFL don't even feel like the season starts until you get to about Thanksgiving. Right before you start the final month of the regular season. You know, the preseason is just that. It's the preseason. It's time to, you know, get yourself in shape, if not physically, then certainly mentally. And it's a time to, you know, let younger players try to earn their way onto a roster someplace. And we've certainly seen that in no uncertain terms in New England. Because there just wasn't much thought put into the games themselves and probably won't be for some time. That just seems to be the philosophy around here. But when you start the regular season, you have a tendency to, you know, realize that this is a marathon. It is not a sprint. We heard all of this last year when the Patriots continued to, you know, keep the winning streak alive that ultimately obviously reached 21 before they lost to the Dolphins a couple of weeks ago in the regular season. The players know that it takes a strong, consistent effort week in and week out, and that when one week is over, you don't bring it back. You go on to the next thing. We can look back, and we can look ahead, but they don't. And I certainly get why. But that all they want to do, they don't treat any one loss any bigger than any other. They don't let a loss keep them down for very long, if at all. They don't let a win get out of hand. They don't celebrate inordinately because of one win in the early part of the season. It's a good win, yes. You know, they'll slap a few high fives and get some hugs and stuff like that in the locker room after a big win. But, you know, 30 minutes outside the locker room on their way home, it's over. And you go on to the next week. And you have to maintain that kind of philosophy every week. And the players feel like, you know what, all you got to do until you get to the real season, which is Thanksgiving on, post-Thanksgiving, if you will, in the regular season, you just got to stay afloat. You just got to stay in the mix. You just got to stay alive. And if you can do that, if you can stay in the mix, stay in the hunt, whatever cliche you want to use here, to where you can make a run at the end of the year, that is the goal of any team, but that is certainly the goal of a team that has a few nicks, a few cuts, a few bruises, a few dents in the armor. And that's what the Patriots have. Case in point is, the New York Giants from last year. You know, they got off to an 0-2 start. They were, 6-2 at the break, and then they played their best football from Thanksgiving on last year. And even though they lost to the Patriots in the regular season game, we all know what happened last February. So I would say that the Giants are a perfect example of, you know what, just stay in the hunt. Stay in the mix. Be relevant in the middle part of the year. Don't get too far behind. Don't get worried if you're too far ahead. Just remain in the mix. Keep an even keel during the majority of the regular season. And when you do that, and if you're able to do that, then you have a chance to get it going and to build momentum and get on a run and play some serious football in December and into January. And that's really where the Patriots are. That's where the Patriots are. That's where the Chargers want to be. And you could make a case for any of these 10 or 11 so-called contenders in the AFC now. You can make a case for any one of those, potentially utilizing that kind of a philosophy and that kind of a theory and that kind of a practice, moving on, which is why I asked the question today again, webradio@patriots.com. That's why I asked the question. Give me in your estimation, a pretender and a contender in the AFC right now. Two teams. And tell me why you choose them, why you look at them as a contender or a pretender in particular. Yeah, I think the Patriots are a contender, sure. I also think the Chargers are a contender. I'm not sold on the 5-0 Tennessee Titans. I'm not sold on them yet. Might need to see another week or two before I would stamp them a legitimate pretender. But certainly they're in the mix. They're no worse than being in the mix. And again, as I've just explained, that's really all you need to be at this stage of the game. It's all you need to be. I'm wondering as well if there are other teams that intrigue you, that you think have an opportunity to play themselves into contention if they're not there already. Somebody else that could surprise, somebody else that might surprise in a negative sense. Be interested in what you have to say. webradio@patriots.com. Get this from PFT, from Pro Football Talk, that the surgery for Tom Brady apparently went pretty well. The Boston Globe also saying that the procedure went well for Tom after tearing the ACL and MCL against the Chiefs in the season opener. This was done at the Curlin Job Orthopedic Clinic in Los Angeles. The recovery time is expected to be 6 to 8 months, which, of course, I guess in theory, if you go by just the calendar, means that Brady might not be ready to return in time for spring minicamps. But he should be ready for summer training camp in July, and I think everybody would be somewhat satisfied with that. Don't count out Tom Brady. He'll be on his own, you know, agenda, and he'll be on his own routine, and the guess is here is that he will step up his efforts to get back as quickly as is humanly possible for him. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the June minicamp. Wouldn't be surprised at all. But maybe, you know, they take precautions and don't let him come back too early, and maybe they bring him back for the summer. Something to shoot forward to anyway, right? Who's there? Oh, okay. Christina Acra. Hello, Christina.
Hi, how are you?
Make sure her mic's on.
Can you hear me now?
There she is.
There hello. I am.
Hey, how's it going?
Fabulous.
You didn't get a chance to make the trip out to California?
No, I didn't. Brian Lowe was on the trip out there. He's there now. I'm holding down the fort here in the studio, making sure everything's good in Foxborough.
Does this mean then that you get to make the second trip out there?
Maybe. I might petition for that, depending on how much fun he's having out there without me. So we'll see if they send me the second time. But, yeah, we're trying to keep things in order here, kind of shifting our whole schedule because we're 3 hours ahead. So,
how difficult has that been to plan things this week and get things posted and put up and such? How much of a kink is that putting the plans?
It's just kind of basically moving our entire day, back. I came in a little later today. Probably be here a little later tonight kind of thing. But we just want to make sure that we get everything that we normally have. We're trying to be as normal as possible as far as getting things up on the web, the coach, the players, the practice updates and things like that. So everything's kind of exactly the same, just shifted a little bit in time. So not too crazy yet. We'll see how it all goes.
That's cool. All right. So what are you working on? Can you give us a bit of a sneak preview?
Well, today is going to be the first day that in our show we will be showing what the facilities are like out in, I believe it's San Jose, where they are right now. Yep. Brian will be at practice. He's going to give us an update of what the scene looks like. You know, obviously the wonderful weather. I'm sure he will push that in his piece. But, yeah, we're just going to give everybody a feel of what it's like out there, what the players are up to, what practice looked like, how they're feeling, and we'll go forward from there.
Do you get the sense, Christina, that, you know, this, you know, it seems to be more and more a general consensus here, but do you get the sense that this was a good move to make sure that this team is sort of relocated and try to keep them, you know, as close to home without all the travel
Absolutely.
As possible?
Yes, yeah. I do think so. Just the flying alone, when you really think about it logistically, how they would have to come back and turn around almost in a matter of, you know, hours, it would probably seem like, on their bodies and their minds. But and the good thing is, when they're out there, it's all football. Like they are solely thinking on you know, their preparation for the next week. And I think even Bill Belichick said it was great to wake up here and just immediately get to work. You know, you don't feel the jet lag, you don't feel the change in time. And I think that the players were definitely big advocates of going out there, and they like that they have a full week in a sense, and the mind is focused strictly on football because that's where they are and what they're out there to do. I think they might have a little bit of free time here and there, hopefully to see some of them might be able to go back home and things like that. But, yeah, I think it was a great move.
Well, I think we get the sense that maybe a little of the juice is gone from the Patriots-Chargers rivalry for this game simply because of the injuries to the significant players on both sides of the football. But then in reading through some of the San Diego media already this week, I'm not so sure that's the case. I think the Chargers still harbor some ill will toward the Patriots, and some of the conversation that I've been trying to drum up today has to do with that, whether or not you think that's hurtful or helpful, and whether or not you even think the Patriots care one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts on that, one way or the other, yourself?
I think no matter what, there's definitely going to be some kind of rivalry there, just because that they've had so many games against this team in the past 3 years. They said it was almost like a division game practically.
Right.
And even though things change and, you know, personnel changes on both sides, I think that, you know, anything that they can find to amp up the energy and to get going, and San Diego's definitely a good team regardless, so I think that they almost not look for it, but they welcome the challenge and they like it, and I think it's good for them, and I think it makes for interesting games. I don't think it's died down whatsoever.
Well, I don't think that it certainly has died down on the part of the Chargers. I know the Patriots are trying to downplay it, but when you have guys, you know, on a one team, San Diego, call the Patriots classless like they've had over the last couple of games that they've played, I can't imagine that that doesn't stick somewhere in the minds of the Patriots players.
Right, and honestly, it's probably going to do nothing but be a boost for the Patriots. They definitely play it down, but if they hear it and they know it, they, like they say, they always bring it out on the field. So I don't think that's anything that the Chargers want to be doing too much, because the Patriots can take that and use it to their advantage for sure.
This has certainly turned out, I think, to be a season that nobody expected. And to that end, this team continues to try to find itself, I think, a little bit, maybe an identity for itself, you know, through the first 4 weeks, now 5 weeks when you count the bye week involved. And at 3-1, you can't say that it's too far away from where you thought this team would be, even if they were completely healthy. So how long do you think it will take? And has this team already found an identity for itself?
There's been a lot of adjustments, and some people say it takes 4 games, and some people say, I think even Tom Brady himself says it takes till Thanksgiving. You know, and they always have the fact in their mind that it's a long season, so they're taking game by game by game. But I think that's really what they're doing this time. They're not getting ahead of themselves, because anything could happen. I think we've seen that across the NFL this whole season with a lot of different teams, not just the Patriots. But I think they definitely, they know who they are. They know what they have. It's just taken a lot of adjustments so far. Things that come out of nowhere, obviously, that no one could predict. But you know, anything could happen, like you said. And with the Dolphins game, I think that was something that they're going to do nothing but take and fix everything that they possibly can and make sure that doesn't happen again.
Well, you certainly had a chance to talk to, you know, the guys in the locker room and get their take on what's transpired thus far. How do they feel this team is progressing, and do they feel like they're getting any closer to having an identity for themselves?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think so. I think that they say, you know, we know the talent on this team. They know what we have, or we know what we have is what they say, and they have every confidence in every player on the team, including Matt Cassel, all the way, you know, to the new guys on the team, and they show nothing less than full confidence in what they can do, and it's just a matter of going out there and executing is what they, you know, what they are constantly saying. And you know, they know when they don't execute, and they know how to, hopefully they know how to fix that and go back and look at the mistakes and look at the things that they need to do to be the better football team on the field. So I think they're pretty confident. It's just a matter of putting it into action and executing it.
The other question, Christina Acker, of course, from Patriots Today, joining us here inside the playbook. The other question I had today has to do with you know, just the perception that the AFC race right now is completely wide open. You could go anywhere from 8 to 10 or even 11 teams that you have to consider contenders. Of the teams that are, you know, would look to be contenders, you know, pick one that you think yourself could potentially be around for the long haul, and another one that you think will end up being a pretender. In other words, is sort of a false contender at this time. Mm-hmm. Looking for two teams, you know, on a positive and a negative. What do you think?
Positive and negative. Well, I think, first of all, the Dolphins, I think, are shocking everyone.
Yes, they are.
But they definitely are showing signs that they could go all the way. They might be the one that slips, though. They might be the team that, yeah, they might be on a little bit of a run here, but what do they really have in their personnel? How far can they really go?
So you look at the Dolphins as a pretender.
A pretender, yes. And then as far as the Jets are concerned, they're kind of in the same boat. And they're saying that their biggest weakness, everybody's saying their biggest weakness, is Favre getting used to the offense. Well, he's done pretty good so far in just a matter of games. But with time, he obviously is going to do nothing but improve if he gets on a good even keel with his teammates and gets the team going. And obviously that they can do nothing but improve. So, I don't know. The Bills are up top right now. We'll see how long that lasts. So I think it's anybody's game. I think we've got four great teams, and it makes for a really exciting season in a sense. You know, you really can't pinpoint which one is going to be dominating come, you know, 10, 12 weeks from now.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's, you know, it's good for football fans everywhere not really knowing, you know, where your heavyweights are coming from. And I was talking a little bit earlier about, you know, the Tennessee Titans and their start, and how I'm sure that it's still a little bit hard for people to get the grasp on Tennessee, even though they've gotten off to an undefeated start. But fact is they are, you know, out there on top of everybody right now. Buffalo's start is another one that is a little intriguing, but at the same time, just because of what we've seen from the Bills in the last few years, you're kind of going, I don't know if I'm sold about them just yet. And so because there are two teams that are toward the top of this pileup now that you're still not sold on, it certainly seems to me that anything could really be a crapshoot this season.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, I think it makes for an exciting season in the NFL. I mean, all the players say this is the NFL. Like, we're seeing it more than anything this year, that anything could happen. You know, the better team on the field on the given day is the one that's walking away with the win. So, you know, anything could happen. I think it makes it exciting.
Well, there's no doubt about that. This team, you know, is going to, you know, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier, how Tom Brady had said that, you know, this team, you know, teams generally don't really kind of take things seriously in terms of looking ahead until you get to Thanksgiving, where that's when they feel like the real season really gets started. That what you want to do before that point in time is just to kind of like stay on an even keel as best you can, stay in the mix, don't get too far. If you're too far ahead, don't worry about it, and don't focus on that. But if you get too don't get too far behind is really what you're kind of aiming for. So because this is such a long haul, sometimes it's very difficult to get what's a good word for this? It's sometimes hard to get candid comments, I think, from the players from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
Simply because, you know, they've got jobs to do. They're trying to do it. We're asking about that. People want to know. And football's such an emotional sport. It's almost surprising to get non-emotional or unemotional responses from time to time, but that's the byproduct of the nature of this season being a marathon rather than a sprint from time to time. And I think that's also why when you see inflammatory comments appear from time to time, like what Nick Hardwick has said in the past about Richard Seymour, mm-hmm. which I was talking about earlier, and how he, you know, certainly would add a little bit of a spice to the game, you know, this Sunday night with the Chargers. That's why we pounce on it so much. Somebody had asked me a question before and said, you know, why do you guys make such a big deal over what players say? And quite frankly, it's because, well, because when they say something outlandish, it's usually, it's rare. I mean,
right.
you can count the number of players that say things outlandish basically on one or two hands.
Right.
And, you know, Terrell Owens is probably up at the top of that list, right?
Yes, yes, he's known for that. But, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, this team more than anybody really knows how to stay focused and ignore that stuff. I mean, ignore it as far as commenting on it. They do it in the least, you know, They try to do it best as they can without going overboard and mm-hmm. creating bulletin board material, which everyone, you know, claims that it is, which I think it is in the sense. And this team is good and likes the fact that they hear it, they move forward, they ignore it to as their best of their ability. But, yeah, it's random. You don't hear it, and you certainly don't hear from this team a lot at all. They really, really do try to stay focused. I mean, even if you go back and look at last season, my first season with them, the hype and just, you know, from I think it was game three, everyone was like, this team's going all the way. Mm-hmm. This is the season. And I couldn't understand it. I was like, I don't understand. They're not even listening to it. They're not even reacting. Like, you ask them about it, and, you know, they don't even think about it. And, you know, this season now, you can kind of see them almost, the baby steps that they're taking, the game by game that they're taking approach like they always have. But more than anything, I think this year I definitely am understanding why they take that approach and see why that they work so hard just to stay on the next game that's at task at the you know, for them to take on.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I definitely have seen that more than anything this season, that they definitely call it a one game season, and that's the way that they prepare.
You know, that is kind of an interesting point that you make there, because that's so hard, I think, for people who aren't around the team or who don't understand football as much to really grasp. But I think this year it's turning out to be a lesson for everybody, Patriots fans and non-Patriots fans alike, learning how, you know, hey, if there's never more evident of time, this would be it, and learning how to try to take it week from week, because that's what this team is, you know, that's what this team has to do to get by and to try to improve.
Right, right. It's a long season. It definitely is, especially when you throw in week-long trips out west and, you know, some tough opponents, so... Definitely a long season, and I think more than anything, I'm understanding their game by game approach. And it's hard to understand it, and it's hard to not hear players responding and saying, you know, oh, you know, especially responding to things that other teams say. But
right.
they take it in the best way they can, and I think everybody should know that they do nothing but take it and use it to their advantage for sure.
Right. Well, Christine, I appreciate your spending a couple of minutes with us here on the show. It's always good to get your perspective, you know, and a lot of fans probably appreciate that as well, simply because they watch you guys' stuff on Pedro's today. So let me wrap it up by saying this then. When you look at this football team right now, where do you see them going from here, based on your talking with the team, based on your conversations with the guys and what you guys are working on, and whether or not you see a big upside or a short upside? Not that a short upside is bad, but is this a team, in your estimation, that could still be in it for the long haul?
I think so, of course. They have the personnel and the players to do it. They have the talent. And the only thing that they do from one game to the next is improve on the mistakes that they made. So the Dolphins game might have been a bit of a I guess fluke is kind of the word. I think that the Dolphins got the better of them, but I don't think that they're going to let that happen again. I think they're going to take from that, they're going to learn from it, and they're going to do the game-by-game approach, going from one to the next, and look at the opponent at hand. They definitely have the coaching, they have the players to do it, they have the talent, and I think this team is going to be fine this year.
All right, good stuff. All right, once again, then, give us an update for those that might be just tuning in here in the second hour of the show. Give us an update on what Patriots Day is going to bring us later on.
Yeah, this week, starting today, we have Brian Lowe out at the practice facility where the Patriots are practicing today for the first time, I think, since they've been out there. They had a day off yesterday. Brian's going to take us through the facility, kind of show us the scene, the weather, of course, how nice it is out there, which it's pretty nice out here, too. So, but, yeah, we're just going to set it up, hear from the guys in the locker room, see how they're feeling this week. And, of course, Coach will have a press conference. So just a basic rundown of what the scene is out there and how they're feeling, getting ready for San Diego.
Thanks for spending a little time with us today,
thanks,
Christina.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you got it. Appreciate it. Christina Acker from Patriots Today joining us here inside the playbook. Just concluded a short while ago, in fact, from San Diego, or actually I should say San Jose State University, where the Patriots are practicing or getting ready to start practice today, is a conference call with Patriots offensive tackle Matt Light. And so members of the Chargers media, as well as members of the Patriots media on the East Coast, as well as those in attendance out on the West Coast as well, had a chance to sit in and ask some questions of Matt Light, and you get your chance to listen in. So here is Matt Light on a conference call.
Matt, you play this team, it seems, almost every year now. Does it have kind of the feeling, I think your coach was saying, of a division game? Has it reached that much of a rivalry game for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot said, you know, about, you know, the matchups that we've had over the last, 4 years. And, you know, I think we definitely have familiarity with him, and it does feel as though it's kind of like the, the Colts-type game where we end up playing each other every year. So, yeah, a little bit.
Matt, are they doing anything differently without Sean Merriman?
No, I mean, it's pretty much a lot of the same stuff. You know, a lot of pressure, a lot of edge pressure. You know, a lot of guys, in and out of the line of scrimmage and a lot of movement. So I don't really... You know, I really don't think from what we've seen on film that they've changed the way that they approach each game.
Did they flip sides? Like, is Phillips now playing the side that Merriman maybe played in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see, you know, Sean's going to be over to the strength side where, you know, Merriman, that was kind of his role in the past. And I think you're going to see, you know, guys like Harris and Giles on the back side of that. And but pretty much they're playing, you know, the same spots that they always have.
Matt, what is your background with Nick Hardwick? Were you guys teammates back at Purdue?
With Phillips?
With Hardwick, the center?
Yeah, with Hardwick. And, you know, Hardwick came in after I'd left, and I believe he was actually a walk-on at one point. And then Phillips and I played together for a couple of years. You know, he was a young guy in the system when I graduated, but we definitely have some background there.
So maybe a little Purdue on Purdue, is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, we've had some fun over the years, you know, facing each other. And you know, he kind of, when he was at Purdue, he had guys like, you know, Roosevelt Colvin that, you know, he kind of modeled his, you know, game after a little bit when he was young, in his, you know, in his early years. And you know, I kind of see a little bit of that style and the way he plays. But you know, again, he was a younger guy when we were there. But we had some good battles in college, and it's been fun, you know, facing him, you know, in San Diego.
Matt, how different has this week been because you guys aren't at home?
Well, you know, I mean, it's been different. You know, today went, you know, pretty much like it always does. Aside from, you know, having to travel, going over to San Jose State and little things like that, it's pretty much a straight-up work week for us. And if anything, it actually gives us a little bit more time to go over things and, you know, film, study, or get together as a group, because we are, you know, we're all staying in one area. So, you know, it kind of makes it easier for us to work on some of these things that otherwise might have taken a little bit more time, or guys' schedules might have been conflicting or whatever. So, we're definitely going to get enough. We're going to learn a lot about these guys in a short period here.
Is there a team-building aspect to it? Do you feel like it's good for the team as a group?
Well, yeah, I think it's, I think it's just what we needed to do, you know, for this type of a week and just the situation.
Time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League Championship in the history books, the Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack started just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst! Are you kidding me?
Revolution.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square.
Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and a long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook for a Wednesday. John Rook here with you. And that was Matt Light on his conference call with members of the media from the New England Patriots, both on the West Coast and here at home on the East Coast, just a short while ago from the friendly confines of San Jose State University, where the Patriots, of course, are practicing and headquartered nearby in Santa Clara, leading up to the game against the Chargers. We'll hear from safety Rodney Harrison coming up in just a few minutes as well. In the meantime, still plenty of time for you to contribute to the program, webradio@patriots.com, on whether or not you have a pretender and a contender in the AFC. That's what I'm looking at least through 5 weeks of the schedule thus far, who you think is a contender and who you think is a real pretender amongst the teams that have gotten off to, shall we say, surprising starts. Christina Acker brought up, I think, a pretty good choice in the Miami Dolphins. Opened up a lot of eyes with their win over the Patriots and, of course, their win last week over the Chargers. But do you really believe that they can be in it for the long haul? Yeah, that's a universal no, I think, that most people think of. But you know what? They're surprising thus far. Let's see what they can do over the next couple of weeks, and maybe that will change. Here's a team that is, long been a contender in the AFC. I don't think that they've been relegated to pretender status just yet. And it's funny because I know that ESPN.com guys, I'm just searching around through some of their blogs and stuff, and they're doing almost the similar thing that we're doing here. It started just 20 minutes or so ago talking about contenders and pretenders in the NFL overall, even though while we're kind of focusing on the AFC in particular here. But my good friend John Clayton, there's a name drop for you. He's doing that stuff right now online, so I think it's kind of interesting. Although it's not in a readily available format. I guess it's a chat or something going on. Anyway, the Indianapolis Colts, I think we all realize Peyton Manning not being involved to the point where, you know, he had that injured, that ruptured bursa sac in his knee during preseason, kept him out of the entire preseason, so he didn't play it down, much like Tom Brady didn't play it down in the preseason, and he has struggled. For the most part, although he's had some great moments and lifted the team on his shoulders to take them to a win or two at this time, you'd have to consider them a bit of a surprise in a negative sense. Well, they made some big news today. If you hadn't heard, wide receiver Marvin Harrison had not been charged with that April shooting in North Philadelphia. Apparently, you know, there was a nightclub that he owned, and I guess there was a shooting outside this nightclub, and allegedly this shooting had happened with a gun that was licensed to him. The police investigation into this incident is still open. He remains, or at least, you know, he certainly remains out, but he has also maintained his innocence and non-involvement. But the alleged victim today, in this shooting incident, is a gentleman by the name of Dwight Dixon, has filed a civil suit today against Marvin Harrison. He's claiming that he suffered serious and permanent injuries and a severe shock to his nerves and nervous system as a result of the shooting. This has come out through the Philadelphia Daily News today. Harrison did acknowledge to Philly police detectives that he had been in a fight with Dixon before the shooting took place, but he said he did not have anything to do with the physical shooting itself. We're still waiting to hear if we're going to get any kind of a comment from Harrison or his attorney or his agent, but so far nothing. But the lawsuit was filed last month and just came to the public eye today. It's looking for $100,000 in damages, and it looks like it's going to go forward whether Harrison is charged criminally in the incident or not. Now, here's a guy that, quite frankly, has been, you know, above it all in the NFL during his time as a player. Would you not agree with that? You know, here's a guy that seems to have been a pretty good citizen, great player, great teammate, obviously one of the best wide receivers in the league. And if anybody has karma, if anybody has chemistry going between them, it is Peyton Manning to Marvin Harrison. One of the great combinations of all time in the National Football League, quarterback to receiver of all time. I don't think I'm making a huge statement by saying that. And yet, here's a guy that's getting tarnished now. Maybe it is of his own doing. Who knows? Wrong place, wrong time, what have you. We all know how fragile that can be. But here's a team in the Colts that has never really been tarnished by a scandal or scandals. Not like, you know, the Patriots with Spygate, and not like, you know, other things that have happened, you know, over time in the NFL. The Colts seem to have been one of those teams that was just largely untouchable. You know, that they were above it all.
And I don't know if it was just because of Peyton Manning or, you know, Tony Dungy or some of the other, you know, personalities on this team, players on this team, but it just always seemed like they were almost too clean for their own good. And this does a lot today to tarnishing that image. And so a team that has struggled from the gate, certainly some of it because of Manning, and a lot of it because, you know, they've lost Bob Sanders as well for a time with injury, and, you know, they've had some injuries on the offensive line, and they've had some inconsistencies on both sides of the football, even some inconsistencies from Adam Vinatieri. It just, this team has not caught, certainly offensively speaking, they have not caught fire like we have seen them do. And so there is some consistent inconsistency, if that's a phrase, that the Colts have that, you know, they kind of share with the Patriots. The Patriots have consistently been inconsistent to this point in the season. And they share that kind of with the Colts. Two teams that have been contenders over the last several years that have been relegated to the middle of the pack, for lack of a better phrase, this season, based on what we've seen injury-wise and the other teams that are surprising in the AFC. This is, though, it's a surprising story. The plaintiff's case, his attorney, this guy Dixon, his attorney today said that it's our position that Marvin Harrison was the shooter. But he says, even if you believe the other theory, Marvin's gun was still used in the shooting, so he was negligent for leaving the weapon where someone else could obtain it. I'd have to say that that seems to be a pretty good argument where that's concerned. And because of that, I'd have to say that Marvin is going to have a very, very, very hard time not proving some sort of liability. And, of course, I think we all realize this is not a criminal case. It's a civil case against him. And I wish him luck. I also wish the Colts luck in trying to, you know, put a story like this to the sidelines so they can actually concentrate on football. I don't think that this is going to be easy to do. It never is. Anytime a story like this comes up. Now, look at the case in point of the Patriots with the whole Spygate issue from a year ago. And the Patriots actually used that as a rallying cry. I think we all pretty much realize that. Used that as a rallying cry and helped solidify this team and put them together as one through a difficult time. They rallied around their coach. They used the whole us against them, us against the world, you know, chip that they have used so well over the last several years. And they were able to use it again last year. And it worked for the most part. I don't know that the Colts can use it this way because we're talking about a criminal offense here, number one. Number two, we're also talking about a guy who has largely been untouchable, unscathed, generally thought to be a good guy, and now he's being dragged through the muck. Maybe his Colts teammates find a way to rally around him, much like the Patriots rallied around Coach Belichick a year ago. Possible. Maybe they find a way. But there's just something to me that indicates that if it's a criminal offense, that it's much more difficult to rally around. Because if it's not criminal, as Spygate turned out to be a year ago, then, you know, there are varying degrees of acceptability. But when it comes to a criminal case, there is no degree of acceptability where that's concerned. And so there's really no way that you can... let's just put it this way. It's more difficult to get behind a guy if it looks as if he is guilty. And certainly in a civil sense, it doesn't look good for Marvin Harrison. So therefore, in my thought, and I don't know what you think, but certainly feel free to offer your opinion as well, webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. It doesn't look like this is going to be just one of those things that's easily to, you know, shove off the backside for the Colts. This could be a story that could last with them for a while. I don't necessarily think it takes from the Colts from contender to pretender in the AFC. Well, let's just say that the job got a little bit more difficult. It just got a little bit more difficult for the Indianapolis Colts. So that's one of the big items on the NFL agenda today. Another story as well coming out of Philadelphia Donovan McNabb wrote in his blog, and I don't even know where his blog is. I'm picking this up through PFT and through ESPN, but he blogged today
that he was embarrassed that the Eagles lost to the Washington Redskins and Chicago Bears in successive weeks. Here we go. His blog is on yardbarker.com, so you can go take a look at that if you want. And he said that the Eagles are better than what they showed the last couple of weeks. But his quote was, "I'm embarrassed with the way we played the past 2 weeks, and I believe that we lost to teams we should have beaten. Not because I think the Redskins and Bears are not good, they are. But I still believe we are better, we just didn't show it. I'm embarrassed with the way I played. I didn't do enough to win the game for my team, and I take that to heart. I want the ball in my hand when the game is on the line, and if I have it, I have to make a play. I'll take that responsibility." You know, that's refreshing in a sense. That's refreshing to see a player willing to take that kind of responsibility on his shoulders and directly blame himself for a team's performance over the last couple of weeks. You don't see that a lot, and you certainly don't hear that a lot in the NFL at all. But I wonder, in another sense, if that isn't serving to kind of distract some. Can you see that side of the story? I mean, here's a quarterback who's obviously very vocal. He's a lightning rod for attention. He's certainly popular. It looks to me that he's kind of gotten his game back in a lot of sense, although the Eagles have failed over the last couple of weeks, as you know, with those losses. Maybe he's doing it to charge up his team. Maybe he's doing it to take the pressure off of his teammates and some of the criticism that they're currently getting, you know, in and around Philadelphia. Positively. You know, I guess it's possible. But his end quote on the blog, that the last one I'm reading here, is, "I'm better than this and I'll prove it. I know my team is too. Now we have to prove it." So it sounds to me like he's also kind of challenging his team as well. And I don't know how you feel about vocal players, but vocal leaders sometimes can say a little too much. McNabb is definitely putting himself and his team out there. Well, I guess we'll have to see if he can figure out a way to back that up. Let's see, a couple of other NFL items to share with you for today. Saints placed kicker Martin Gramatica on IR. Let's see, what else? He's missed 4 field goals in the last 3 games. So, you know, we were talking about this, I think, was it yesterday? Or yeah, it was the tail end of last week. I think we were talking about how when it came down to Gramatica or Gostkowski, and Patriots obviously made the right choice where that's concerned, going with the youth. And, you know, Steven Gostkowski has been one of the great stories, I think, unwritten, unheard, consistent, solid stories for the Patriots in that regard. With everything else that's happened thus far this year, his story has been kind of under the radar. He would probably prefer it stay that way. But if he continues with this successful streak, which is at 17 straight field goals made now, and gets close to challenging, if not passes, Adam Vinatieri's club record of 25 straight, then he'll begin to get more of that attention. That's coming in the next few weeks, kids. So keep an eye on that story, because that is going to be ahead, and I think you'll see Steve Gostkowski get a little bit more national attention, if not regional attention, national attention for his success, as long as he continues to keep it going. The Jets made some news today as well that Eric Smith is going to officially sit out this Sunday's game against Cincinnati. He had his appeal of his 1-game suspension and fine for the helmet-to-helmet hit on Anquan Boldin. He had it denied by the NFL. So Eric Mangini said today that Smith will sit out this week, that the team had some plans in place, and they're just going to continue to go that route. So Smith was suspended and fined, which includes a 1-game check, $50,000 last week after that play at the end of the Jets' 21-point win on September the 28th. He said he appealed the decision, Smith did, because there was no malicious intent on his part. Well, naturally, what are you going to say? No, it was my idea to knock the guy's block off. Fact is that if you go helmet to helmet, it's just going to get you in trouble. And you have to try to avoid that. That's hard to do for those guys. I realize that, especially when you're operating on emotion and you're operating on instinct and you just fly to the football, which is what defensive backs do. And in this case, Eric Smith being a safety, that's what he does. He flies the football. He doesn't think about the hit. And I think the NFL is trying to get teams and players to think about hits. It's just like what happened to Brady against Kansas City and what we've seen some of the other, you know, stars that have gone down this year. It appeared that in a lot of cases, not all, but a lot, the hits could have been avoidable if players had considered beforehand. I don't think that that's easy to do. In fact, I would be willing to say I think that's darn near impossible to do. Think about the hit before you deliver it. I think that's ridiculous. I think what players and teams are going to have to realize is that from here on out, if you hit a player in a certain area, whether it be in the head or below the leg, below the knee, you are going to be fined. And it's just going to be the cost of doing business in the NFL. That's all you're going to be able to chalk it up to, the cost of doing business. And that if you're the one that, you know, did the play, then you've got to do the time. You got to pay the fine. I don't know how that will sit with players, because I think they'll feel like, you know, hey, subconsciously this could end up affecting my ability to react. And yeah, I could certainly buy that argument. I could, but fact is that, you know, when players continue to put themselves in dangerous situations, and other players, knowing that it's a dangerous, violent sport, and we're talking about the overall health and well-being of an individual is being put at risk here, you know, this kind of stuff is going to continue to happen. Especially if we get guys who are paralyzed, much less with their knees torn up. And that was what people thought was going to happen with Anquan Boldin. Fortunately, it did not. But So the one-game suspension and the fine was upheld today by the NFL, and Eric Smith of the Jets will sit out the game against Cincinnati this Sunday. So some of the news taking place around the NFL. A couple of big stories, you have to agree, right on top of it. And one of the guys who has certainly delivered his fair share of big hits over time for the Patriots is Rodney Harrison. Rodney is a, I think we all realize that he's getting up there in terms of his career and his age, but he is still so much a valuable piece of the Patriots puzzle, only because the secondary, being somewhat maligned, not entirely unfairly either, because there is a little bit of a lack of experience where that's concerned, but he has been a calming, steadying influence. He's not the same player he was, you know, a few years ago. But then again, the Patriots may not necessarily need him to be that kind of player. And Rodney remains one of those guys that you love to have on your team, but if you're playing against him, you can't stand him. And so Rodney, of course, gets to go back now to Qualcomm. He gets to go back to San Diego, where he played for, you know, several years and became one of the preeminent defensive backs, preeminent safeties, and one of the most feared safeties in the entire NFL, and maybe even in all time in the National Football League. Could you put him up there with a Jack Tatum? You probably could. You probably could. And now he has a chance to play against his old team again. I wonder if he has any feelings about that one way or the other, and how he relates those feelings to what the current status of the Patriots might be going into this game with the Chargers on Sunday. Well, Rodney had his chance to give his thoughts on that and other subjects leading into the kickoff with the Chargers on Sunday night. We're going to take a commercial timeout, and then we'll come back and let you listen in to Rodney Harrison's conference call with members of the Patriots media right here inside the Playbook.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football.
Oh, okay.
Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football,
all right, well, don't worry about it.
I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mile
awesome hot sack attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Dumoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The Super League Championship in the history books. The Revs are making another run in an MLS Cup Championship. Don't miss their playoff push at Gillette Stadium with the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack. With the Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack, you'll get two tickets to one of the Revs' final matches of the season and a pair of Budweiser Revolution pint glasses free. That's two tickets, two pint glasses, and one chance to cheer on the Revolution at Gillette Stadium with playoff implications on the line. Budweiser Quest for the Cup 2-pack start at just $38. Take in a Revs match, and you'll take home a matching pair of Revolution pint glasses free. Must be 21 or older to participate. Call the Revolution ticket office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to revolutionsoccer.net for tickets, game information, and everything else New England Revolution.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pride.
The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet.
Passion.
Oh my goodness! Michael Parkhurst, are you kidding me?
Revolution.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas Tree Shops, Off-Broadway Shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene Restaurant and Bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
All right, welcome back inside the playbook as we continue to roll along here on a Wednesday. I'm John Rook. We'll try to get to Rodney Harrison's interview coming up in just a couple of moments, and we will also hear from Kevin Falk and Sammy Morris as well on their conference calls with members of the Patriots media covering the team against the Chargers on both coasts from this week. So that's why everything's going via conference call, because there are obviously some that cannot get out to San Diego, or at least not in the early part of the week. So guys were set up with conference calls, and we'll let you listen to these interviews in their entirety coming up in a little bit. One other thing that I wanted to bring up today that I thought I'd take the opportunity to kind of mention right now is, I don't know if you saw this on ESPN.com, and I think it's actually been around for about a week or so, maybe a little bit more, because I just actually stumbled across it a couple of days ago and had this, you know, on my list of things to talk about, right? You know, I thought that were pretty interesting, that would be kind of fun to talk about and share with you. And one of them is the best fans in the NFL. ESPN.com ranked the 32 teams in the National Football League in terms of their fans, 1 to 32. Best fans, worst fans. Where do you think the Patriots ranked
Where do you think you, as fans, ranked in the NFL? Top 10? Top 5? Number 1? Would you go that far and consider yourself the best fans in the National Football League? You know I love you, but I have to admit, you know, we probably got where we are with fans when this team started winning in the 1990s and certainly right around 2001 as well. Not that that's a bad thing, because I know that there are a lot of Patriots fans, myself being included, and many others that we talk to from week to week and hear from, you know, almost day to day, you know, in this venue, that have been around this team for a majority of, if not all of, the 49 years that they've been in existence and have been through the bad times as well as the good times. It's just that there aren't many of you. There just aren't as many of you as, say, there are Steelers fans. And you can certainly make an argument that Steelers have been a much more successful franchise from start to present than the Patriots have been from start to present. There's also been more years involved, I agree. But I think the Patriots are still more of a late 90s, let's go to mid-90s. Mid-90s to, you know, 2000s phenomenon in terms of their success and their elite status within the present-day National Football League. The number one group of fans in the NFL, number one, were the Steelers. I think when you think Pittsburgh, I think you think the Steelers. And it's hard for me to argue that. I mean, you know, I'm going to Pittsburgh. Oh, yeah, that's where the Steelers are. That's the home of the Steelers. You don't think of Pittsburgh as the home of the Penguins. You don't think of the Pittsburgh, you know, Pittsburgh as being the home of the Pirates. You think of Pittsburgh being a football steel city. Steelers, Pittsburgh, Steelers, one and the same. They have had roughly 300 consecutive sellouts. So, obviously, the Patriots still have a ways to go. They've had about 149, 150, I think, on the next game, which is a great streak. But they got a ways to go to match what the Steelers have done. They have a season ticket waiting list of more than 6 years. They've only had three head coaches since 1969. They have had five Super Bowl titles, which, you know, obviously is, you know, hey, the Patriots have three. It is what it is, right? So, I mean, you'd have to put that right up there. The fans support the Steelers in Pittsburgh. And they probably have as much right to grumble when things don't go well for their team as any group of fans in the NFL. The number two team, in terms of fans, was Green Bay. They've had 269 consecutive sellouts, and they have a season ticket waiting list of almost their entire stadium, about 78,000, I think, from Lambeau Field. So there's a lot of passion in Green Bay. Now, what I think is a little bit strange is that Cleveland and the Browns and their fans were ranked number three. I realize that Cleveland lost their team, but it's only because Art Modell chose to pull his team out and move them on, which is kind of unusual. But I guess they have taken to the new Browns. And even though it's taken them a while to get together, they continued to sell games out. They've had 72 consecutive sellouts themselves. Pittsburgh, let's see, Cleveland was three, Philadelphia, number four. Yeah, they are, you'd have to say the Eagle fans are pretty loyal. Chiefs fans are number five. Arrowhead Stadium is called one of the noisiest stadiums in the NFL and one of the most difficult places for a visiting team to play. Ranked number six, Washington. 319 consecutive sellouts, and they got a season ticket waiting list of over 200,000. Is that even right? Is that possible? Well, you know, the new stadium is way outside of town, and yet apparently the fans haven't, you know, stayed away in droves. They continue to come out in droves. And in spite of Dan Snyder being, shall we say, an overly involved owner, the Redskins have managed to persevere in terms of getting the fan support. So I guess that's perhaps why the Redskins are ranked number six in this particular poll. Denver is ranked number seven. Where the heck are the Patriots, you say? Where are the Patriots? Number eight. Patriots fans, you're ranked 8th out of 32 in terms of best fans in the entire NFL. Now, here's what Tim Graham, who is the AFC East blogger on ESPN.com, has to say. In case you didn't get a chance to see this, he says, there's no way to argue with a fan base that has sold out Gillette Stadium since it opened. Pushing the Patriots streak to 149 games, including playoffs, and is willing to join a waiting list 50,000 deep to get a crack at season tickets today or someday. On-field dominance will do that. It'll be interesting to see, though, how the addition of Patriot Place, a commercial development that offers shopping, restaurants, a movie theater, and a medical center, will affect the game day dynamic. Do you throw Italian sausages on the grill or grab a teriyaki burger at Red Robin? One sounds more festive than the other. Now, I guess I could see that. I also know that I think there was some initial concern when Gillette Stadium first opened that with the club areas and the red seats and the Fidelity Investment clubhouses and stuff that we have at the stadium, that, you know, it had a tendency to take some of that sense of urgency out of a lot of the fans. That, you know, we didn't have that old, Spartan atmosphere that helped to toughen fans up and make them more vocal like we had at, you know, Foxborough Stadium. And frankly, you know, you could see where some of the amenities of a stadium could soften fans somewhat. Fortunately, that hasn't been a real problem for the most part since we've had Gillette Stadium, but I could see how someone from the outside looking in could come to that conclusion, especially if you consider, you know, Patriot Place and its development and so many options and so many choices for fans on game day to come to and to get involved with, and then all of a sudden you lose focus on why you're there to begin with, which is, oh yeah, by the way, a football game. And so if you lose the focus of the football game, does that take away any more of the emotion out of the event itself? Frankly, I can see why that conclusion is reached. I don't think the Patriots feel like it's a problem. Otherwise, I certainly don't think they would have built it. But then again, we all know that, you know, hey, it's quite a venture. They also did this because they wanted to extend some of that Patriot feeling around the area. On more than just the 10, you know, regular season game days that they have in Foxborough every year. You know, that's why, you know, they developed the whole year-round aspect with the restaurants and the themes and all that kind of stuff that's going on. They wanted fans to be able to be a part and come out to the stadium or to the stadium area on more than just the 10 Sundays during the NFL regular season. So there's 10 different ways to look at it, obviously. By the way, just in case you're interested, the number 32, the last team on this list with the, I guess that would mean they are the worst fans in the entire NFL. That would be the Arizona Cardinals at number 32. Even though the new stadium has helped draw some sellout crowds, lots of challenges, and too many fans in that region had already latched on, apparently they say, to other NFL teams. So anyway, for what it's worth, it's good cannon fodder. It's good to consider. But Patriots fans, you're number 8. You're number 8, at least on that particular poll. All right, let's wrap up the program today. We're going to give you an opportunity to listen to, that's right, 8. We're going to give you an opportunity to listen into the conference calls featuring Rodney Harrison, also Kevin Falk, and Sammy Morris of the Patriots as the team continues to prepare further for the San Diego Chargers. Tomorrow's program, of course, on Thursday, Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator. He'll be a part of our regular program, and we hope that you will be as well. Plus, we'll have our conference calls from San Diego tomorrow, Norv Turner and LaDainian Tomlinson on tap during tomorrow's playbook. Here now, Rodney Harrison to lead it off inside the playbook.
Had some time to sort of adjust to what you're seeing. Well, I mean, it was good because it gave us the opportunity to get some rest. And I think from a defensive standpoint, when they came out and we got down early, just some extra time to come on the sideline and really get some adjustments taken care of, and gave us the ability to calm down, because I mean we were kind of all over the place initially, and then with the offense controlling the ball of possession time, it really gave us that chance just to calm down and get things together.
Rodney, you guys did a really good job on third downs. I know that had been a point of emphasis in your mind. What was the difference yesterday as compared to other points in the season where it hadn't been there for you guys in terms of getting on the field?
I think coverage is a combination of pass rush as well as covering down the field, and our guys up front gave us an opportunity to give us the time to cover, and I think the guys were a lot more aggressive. We do a lot of the routes that they were trying to do, and we're able to just play aggressive and make some plays on the ball, and we just went out there and competed.
How much of that in your mind, Rodney, was that you guys were able to put them in some third and longs and slow down the run and really kind of take Gore out of the game?
Well, I think every week your number one responsibility, I think this is with any NFL defense, the fact that you have to take away the run. You cannot give them an opportunity to pass the ball as well as run the ball, especially with a guy, Mike Martz's offense, which, you know, deals with so much trickery, deep routes, intermediate routes, screen game. It's so tough to try to dictate what he's trying to do. So our point of emphasis is take away the run, number one, and then be able to be very competitive on the passes down the field. And initially we weren't, but as we calmed down, we played a lot better.
Rodney, there were a lot of different people involved in the dime package. Will Height, Gary Guyton. How do you think they acquitted themselves in the time that they were on the field?
I don't know. I mean, as you ask Coach Belichick that, I just take care of what I got to take care of, and communicating with the guys back there, and I let the coaches coach them. So just ask Coach Belichick exactly how someone played, because that's not really for me to judge.
Rodney, how about just in general, though, that dime package? It seemed like we saw that more in this game than we had in the previous three. How did you feel just being in that package maybe allowed you guys to maybe attack a little bit more or maybe cover better?
No, I mean, just, you know, when they have their four athletic guys out there as wide receiver, we have to have a number of athletic guys to match up with them. And, you know, sometimes you win those matchups, sometimes you don't. Like I said before, it's a matter of us just going out there, being competitive. I thought guys, Ellis and Delta and Jonathan Will Height, you know, and myself, we competed against those guys. I mean, this is a good team, and they got a lot of good skilled players and very underrated. So to be able to go out there and you know, compete with those guys, I mean, it's huge because, I mean, they're good. I mean, people across the country may not think so, but they're going to win a lot of ball games year, and you know, as well as with Mike Martz, I mean, with his expertise on, you know, trying to showcase certain things and route combinations and things of that sort. So I think the guys overall, we did a pretty good job.
Rodney, is it nice to have a relatively normal week to prepare for a team like San Diego?
Yeah, no question. You know, I think, you know, to play a game like this, such a physical game, long grinding game, and then have to fly back 6 hours to the East Coast, you know, and try to get yourself reacclimated, get some rest, practice a few days, and fly right back. I thought that was probably the dumbest thing we could possibly do. So, you know, for us to practice, I mean, to play a game and then come back and really be able to sleep in, get our rest, hydrate, and get guys some bumps and inches, some bumps and bruises, getting that taken care of. I thought it's really nice to be on a regular schedule, knowing that you don't have to fly 6 hours anticipating that while you're playing a football game. Like, God, golly, have to fly 6 hours to the East Coast. So I think it's great for us. I mean, I'm 35 years old, so I need to feel as good as possible.
I mean, just the way you guys played, you mentioned it in the beginning, you felt like you guys were maybe a little helter-skelter. Was it encouraging to you that you guys were able to make those in-game adjustments this game, where maybe the last game you had played, you had some difficulty making those in-game adjustments?
Well, I think, you know, once again, I think we were playing on our heels because as you study film, but you understand Mike Martz, I mean, you never know what he's going to do. He can come out with a four wide receiver package, five wide receiver package, or just regular base 21 personnel. So I think initially we were trying to find our way, as you know, and maybe dipping our feet into the water, testing the water, instead of jumping right into it. You know, if you play football, you can't test the waters. You got to go out there. You got to jump right in. You got to be very confident and just play football. And this, once we settled down, I thought we did a pretty good job of making adjustments, communicating, and just making plays on the ball.
Thank you, Rodney. We've got two other players waiting here, so I'm going to take the phone, give it to Kevin Falk, and we'll continue with Kevin Falk.
Hello.
Kevin, do you think you're going to be the darling of the fantasy leagues now that you've scored twice on the goal line?
I have no control over that.
Kevin, I just want to ask you, and I don't know if you answered this yesterday, but just, you know, you passed Terry Glenn for fifth on the all-time list in receptions. Just when you came back here way back when, I think in 99 or so, did you ever think you'd get that high on the pass reception list as a running back?
I think when you come into the league, you don't think about anything like that. You just think about helping your team, and the way this team is set up, that's all it is. You know, just about helping your team win games and, you know, continue on.
Kevin, how good was it last couple weeks, last couple games? You guys had struggled to get touchdowns from the red zone to be perfect yesterday and to get the ball across in the end zone.
Well, I think every game that you play, you know, you try to improve, and this week we tried to improve our red zone offense. And I think we worked hard on it, and it, you know, showed a little bit of difference. We just got to keep it consistent and keep moving.
Kevin, Bill Belichick mentioned yesterday that it might have been back in the fourth grade was the last time you had two rushing touchdowns in a game. Was he right on his research on that one?
That might have been one time that Bill was a little incorrect. I think it was in college that it happened, though.
Do you actually remember the game by any chance?
No, I don't remember. Nah, that's kind of far back for me. I just, you know, I barely can remember what happened a couple of weeks ago.
Kevin, I know you're joking about Bill being a little incorrect, but safe to assume Bill must not be a big SEC football fan if he was saying fourth grade was the last time he scored two touchdowns.
Well, I think he's a big SEC football fan. I think because we have a lot of guys on the SEC that's on the team, so I can't even say that.
Kevin, you know, you're a big part of the offense and also that two-minute package, and we saw it at the end of that second quarter when you guys sort of shifted into that two-minute offense. You know, with Tom Brady, it was sort of a given, you know, that you guys would move the ball down the field, and this was really the first time we saw it with Matt. How did you feel that drive went with Matt, you know, at quarterback, that two-minute drive?
Well, I think it's just about everybody, you know, doing their job, getting everything done correctly, and, you know, not trying to do too much. And I think that's what we got to understand as an offense and as a football team.
What did you see from Matt in that drive that maybe gave you confidence? Because that's probably one of the toughest things for a quarterback to do is lead that two-minute offense, you know, when you're not really huddling all the time.
Well, just like I said, him doing his job. I mean, everybody else doing their job, and, you know, everything should pan out.
Yeah, but I don't know if you got a chance to see the film yet of that touchdown run, but if you did, I wonder if you could critique a little bit. How was Matt at going through with that fake on the snap? I know Tom was always famous for that. How did Matt do with that, selling that?
By looking at the film, it looked like he did, you know, a good job. It was just about, you know, faking it, and the O-line blocking, and me finding the right hole to run.
Sounds good. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
We have Sammy right here as well, so we'll start with Sammy. Thank you, Kevin.
Hello?
Sammy's on the line. Go ahead, guys.
Hello?
Sammy, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right.
Good. This is a question that Mike Reese had asked of Kevin Falk, but just curious for your take on it. The two-minute drive there, I know you weren't necessarily on the field a lot for it, but just watching Matt bring the team down the field like that in the last 2 minutes of the half, how much confidence does that inspire for you guys and Matt to be able to pull off that type of drive and something we've seen Tom do quite a few times?
I think it just kind of reaffirms, you know, the things that we already thought of Matt. You know, he's like you said, he's had, you know, limited opportunities, you know, in the preseason and you know, just going through practices. But like I said, I think we're all, you know, confident in Matt, and you know, we know that he's, you know, got a lot of ability, you know, strong arm, you know, and is accurate as well. So, like I said, I don't think any of us, you know, I think it just reaffirmed our view of him already.